a week together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hi, Marco. Will be joining me as well, presenting from Syracuse. And I'd just like to start out by saying this was originally done on a Mac and had much prettier transitions. I want that noted. I'm just going to briefly introduce things and hand it over to Todd to talk about generals, then I'll hand it back to me. This project came from the American Library Association, and it was at a time that about 2 years ago where both our federal legislation as well as many of the American libraries were wrestling with the rise in things like social networking and Web 2.0 and such, and we're trying to get a grasp on it. And they asked us to look ahead in the technology and try to get a grasp on it as well. And we began with the traditional way that you begin with these things, is sort of dictionary-esque of, well, here's, you know, what's a mashup, and here's this and here's that. And we became very dissatisfied with it because we were looking at surface attributes and functions and features, and we were trying to find more durable concepts. And so what you're going to be hearing about is much more of a work in the midst of emerging, of looking at more durable concepts that we feel will have longer consequences and explain a little bit about the emergence of Web 2.0, but help us look beyond it and into the future. So I'm going to turn it over to Todd Marshall, who will talk about some background here.
Thank you. If we can go ahead and have the... thank you. All right. Start out here with some definitions. That's always a good place to start. As we are looking at participatory networks and the library as conversation, we're having to define actually what we're talking about. Maybe you've heard of participatory democracy, participatory design, the use of participation in other fields, but it hasn't really been applied to libraries. So we've come up with some working definitions which will help, I think, in the rest of the discussion. The first one, of course, participatory network is a collection of nodes where each node has capacity for creation and sharing of knowledge through conversation. So some part of a social network, and typical social network analysis may look at who is connected to whom. This is really looking at what those connections are doing, what's happening. What's the conversation going on and the knowledge that's been created? The second definition, conversation, a specific process in a given context used to elicit or communicate domain knowledge. And we'll look at some of the theory and why we use conversation, not just as a metaphor, but as an actual process. And then what is the participation? Not just interaction, but we've chosen the word participation. An operationalization of conversation theory with human agents for a specific purpose. As we all know, with this, the more recent developments of Web 2.0 type phenomena, there's a move from closed systems to open systems. Even something so simple as the library catalog now looks much more like Amazon.com, where you have recommendations, you have usage statistics, and it's becoming more of an interactive or participatory system. And this is, we see going on even events like news. I just noticed this last week that Google has brought in the feature for their news so that when a story appears, when you search for it, people who are directly in that story or related to that story have the ability to comment. So you might see the comment reporting the story about Dr. So-and-so discover something, and then right below that will be his comment on that news story or her assessment of what was said about her in that. So it's the participation is coming much more to the surface, and it's being more accessible, and so we're having true user inclusion. And we see these concepts as being something very durable. It's not just Web 2.0 and something that will go away. We see it as the conversation as a basic element of human communication, knowledge creation, and sharing. And Web 2.0 really is just an instantiation of that because now it's technically enabled. But it's not the end. And so we also relate this to the transition from a monologue, which is basically what we're having right now, one person talks, many people listen, to a dialogue where you have two people conversing. But what we have technologically enabled is what's coming to be called a multilogue, where you have multiple conversations going on at the same time. In a sense, like a forum would be, where you can have very many different conversations going on at the same time. And how do we, as librarians, keep track of those and use those, and are those relevant? If you were able to be at the museum yesterday for the reception, they talked about a conversation that's going on right now in Barras about a redefining of the city's identity as the industry is changing and globalization. And that's a very significant discussion in the history of this city. How do you record that conversation? How do you make it searchable? What's the context of that conversation? And so those are the issues we're trying to look at. And this is basically the main theory that we found that's relevant and helpful for this is called conversation theory. It comes from a scholar by the name of Gordon Task. And it's basically an educational theory at its heart. And it talks about two participants at its root core. And these two participants are having a conversation, sharing information back and forth until they come to truth. Not in the sense of absolute truth, but agreement. And so person one, or participant one, gives their viewpoint. Participant two says yes, asks for clarification. And this process goes back and forth, and the result is called an entailment mesh. And he did that even with machines and proved that machines can have this type of conversation and learning back and forth. This is not anything necessarily new. It really goes all the way back to the Socratic method of discussion and dialogue as an educational methodology. And so we're looking to modernize Task's work. He was done, of course, before the internet, before the web, but he was talking about hyperlinking type technology back in the early 70s as far as an educational methodology. And so we're also interested this week to have conversations with you for any other theories or ideas that you might have, because as we said, this is a work in process.
So how do we take this concept of knowledge creation through conversation? And I should be really specific that one, some of the bodies of theory that we're linking to are things like complexity theory. So this notion of participant is really a multi-scale phenomenon where you can be having two people talking, two institutions talking, two societies talking, and you can have even aspects of one individual talking, which you might call metacognition. What are the implications? The implications in the library and information domain are if libraries are in the knowledge business, we're not in the data gathering business, we're not in the storage business, we're not in the archiving business necessarily, but in the knowledge business, they're in the conversation business. And that in a networked world, we are allowed to get much closer to actual knowledge creation. Instead of having to wait for knowledge to percolate through this process, we can be at the point of creation. That radically changes how we deal with things. Because a document-centric focus assumes that we've gone through the foment of intellectual discourse and we've ended up with some synthesis at the end. What do we do with the foment of intellectual discourse when it's right out there and obvious? Do we discard it? Do we capture it? How do we organize it? Also, if this implication is that if therefore books, web pages, media, these are simply artifacts, that what we organize is conversation, and our mission is to therefore facilitate conversation, enrich it, capture it, serve as the memory for it, we're not in the artifact business. So what do we do when we make this shift? How do we capture this radical information? How do we also then look at the notion of capturing and facilitating and organizing information that hasn't gone through a peer review process and a synthesis process? Notions of, you talked about formal ontologies and how they break down in Web 2.0. How do we deal with the context sensitivity of these things? How do we add noise to our catalogs and our systems and allow people to tune through those to match their own understandings of this? How do we deal with the multivariate, multi-perspectives on given items and facts? And we talk about facilitation, and Todd's done some work on what does that mean? Well, we talk about, for example, technology and access. First thing we can do is provide access to these conversations. We can provide technical access to them. We can provide access in physical spaces. We talk about competencies or knowledge. How do we provide access to conversations? Well, you need to, once you get to that conversation, speak the right language, understand the precepts, understand the history behind it. Cultural values. How do we have a culture that facilitates free conversation? What are the boundaries we put on conversations? What are the strictures that we provide to those? And finally, motivation. How do we capture or build upon people's intrinsic and extrinsic motivation to have these conversations? When we look at what's happening in the library world, the first column you see over here are really a collections of systems, and what it really represents is a failure on the field of library information science of integration. That chart does not look radically different than a menu system you might find on many libraries. Come ask us a question in reference. Come see our digital library. Come look at our catalog. And what we've been doing is moving faster and faster and finding needs and finding new capabilities and adding those without taking the time necessarily to stop and integrate how those things fit together. The classic example is, what's the difference between a digital collection and institutional repository? They're both digital items. Well, one's generated by the library, one's generated by the institution they're affiliated with. It's not a very satisfying division. And in fact, the second column represents the recognition that we are seeing integration of these different functions and moving to a realization that these are not discrete artifacts, but in fact they are conversations that we're providing access to. So you're seeing things like digital repositories. In virtual reference, you're seeing virtual reference, traditional reference coming together to develop knowledge bases, hosted services. We see in cataloging both the idea of, well, if it's in a database or if it's on a catalog or something, it doesn't matter, we want federated search to search across these things. And we see that continuing into the idea of developing community repositories and enhanced catalogs, but this is ultimately a trajectory. If at its base we are capturing and facilitating conversations, if we are generating knowledge through conversations, and as we get closer and closer to the conversations themselves, then as we get farther and farther beyond the organization of information by artifact, by item, by material, and into the organization of information by knowledge and conversation and participation, we see moving to a truly participatory situation. The idea that user-centered systems are, we go study the users and we build systems for them, we're seeing that breakdown go away to the point where the users are the systems. What we're seeing is a migration away from the idea that the user is somehow consuming information to the point where the information is being generated from the user and their use of the information, and that's dynamically represented within the system. So this notion that participatory librarianship, participatory networks, participatory systems are a durable concept, we see this pressure happening at all levels of our society and the tools that we use. We see the migration of systems from being simply mechanisms and functions that we access to facilitators for us interacting with intelligent cognitive systems, which these days are mostly people on the other end of that line. So this, we believe this theory, this work, this foundation has implications not only for what happens online, but we're working with people like the Philadelphia Free Library to look at how it happens in physical spaces. In many ways, when you look at libraries in Europe and in America, you're seeing the idea, let's pull out the shelves and put in chairs. Let's create more events. We were at the Culture Center, the theater, the museum, the library, close together, because those are all ways of coming to know meaning, and those are all conversations, and it makes sense for them to be co-located. And now we're seeing that our online environment is starting to catch up. How will this impact information retrieval? How will this impact the way we do knowledge organization? We've already given up. I noticed the idea of relevance is no longer an aspect of the document. We've given up that the document has much intrinsic in it anyway. Much of it is what we bring to it. How do we build systems around an extrinsically context-sensitive driven environment? So, thank you for your attention. Are there any questions?
Yeah, in a way, it's very, certain things that it's very challenging deconceptualization of the library. And also, I know that the library has it's a difficult debate about Web 2.0 and perhaps also Web 3.0 and the library. My question is, how do you make the specific value of library and library information science, as it's relevant for the creation of the library, visual, because that is also a venue for conversations. Mm-hmm. Still, there will always be a difference between a library and a platform, even if you,
even if you look deeper into the library. Yeah.
So what is the specific feature of the library, and maybe you can focus on the question of quality. Mm-hmm. How would you generate quality creating mechanisms in that conversation?
I think partly there's this notion of facilitation, and while the pub facilitates many things, I'm not sure it would
for information access right at the top of them. But there's the notion of facilitation and the information domain. The notion of qualities is a tough one. Some of the work we do that I do specifically is in credibility and the notion of what makes credible information. And in a conversation-specific world, quality is very situational. And this may seem obvious, but it comes from the concept of how we come to agreement and how the needs of the community served match the resources and facilitation available to the library is a question of quality. A quality service of quality information is that information which best serves the conversation that you're a part of. So it makes this community and served and the community hosted and organization virtually inseparable. And so how we define quality is really to elicit that from within the community and then to facilitate it back.
Yes. It's good to ask who is speaking the most in that conversation and whose speaking is somehow special for that conversation. And I would say, the speaking of Aristotle and St. Thomas, that's the speech that's specific in my country. In part, there are different people speaking. And that's why I always find a little problem in this kind of things, because when the specific piece of library is that Aristotle and St. Thomas are speaking there, why should we do library in conversation of just every man in Bath?
The prioritization of, we get into notions of power, we get into notions of equality, but ultimately, this is where we come back to community. If we believe that we are serving the community, we believe that the community has the ability to filter out what's important and what's understood. So by recognizing and pulling that information from the community and prioritizing the speech, that gives us buoyancy. The other is the technological reality that, in fact, there isn't as dire consequences to collecting it all as there used to be. One of the metaphors that we use, going back to metaphor, is the notion of a radio. That if you think about a conversation, the old way of thinking about a conversation is walking into a train tunnel in the midst of rush hour and trying to hear everything that's going on. It's noise and chaos. And so the first thing you want to do is say, everyone stop. Business conversations over here, personal conversations over here, medical over here, and you get stuff by the world. But if you think about how a radio works, we have thousands of radio signals going through us right now. They're not following, stopping this conversation. What we need is the technology that allows us to tune the specific conversations, co-locate the specific conversations. And so, in an academic setting, having resources and artifacts available to us that we can then get comments and conversations online, professors, students, scholars. Why not have it all and allow the individuals to then tune out noise that they do not want to hear? So we now have the massive scale of computing and storage have the ability to actually capture it all. You know, I think the question isn't whether we should capture it all. How do we prioritize that the community finds important in that conversation so that we can ultimately see the library as an activist organization that's pushing that community forward and not simply a collector of noise. But it's a great question, and it's not only a complex.
I'm Cecil from the University of Berlin, and I was thrilled actually with your presentation because it picks up on one of the themes that I've been talking a lot with my students about. You may recognize the name of Simon, Nobel Prize winner, University of Chicago, who talks about if you want to make increasing scientific discoveries, what you ought to do is to plant the ideas in your friends, or can gather the most intelligent set of friends you possibly can, and let them work out problems your programs will run in their minds. This is very much the kind of process you're talking about, where we've got in the library a string of conversations going on where we're developing information. And I think that there's a very strong tendency within modern libraries to bring in the coffee shop, because the cafe in the library is where these conversations generate. We've still got a few steps to go to get to the pub.
well, I think it's an excellent idea.
The challenge is that we have a profession that is very object-oriented, very artifact-oriented. And moving our profession to this conversation theme is not easy. I'm in a library school, I have some advantage in having young people to corrupt. But how do we do this?
It's a great question, and I think that one, library schools are a great place to start, but two, that one strategy that I found very successful is to identify the fact that many libraries already have conversational information, and that we expose them selectively. In a scientific endeavor, let's face it, this is the way we're trained. We cite things in our papers not because it's a nice convention, but because we feel we're following a scholarly conversation forward. We put into our gold standard is peer review. Well, what is peer review? Peer review is conversations with the peers around a given topic to try and get at the prioritization question. Is this useful? Is this important? In which we've identified this is a significant attribute of our community.
The other is the notion that cataloging the conversation as well. I mean, Dewey is a conversation. And it's an interesting conversation that a lot of the work of Audrey Dewey is kind of the anti-Semitic and the biologistic part of it. Right? So there's a social conversation going about how to construct that knowledge. Classification is a conversation. And what I'm trying to what I found successful is saying, there are other ones here. Let's expose them as well. And find out if there's utility to them, and find out what that utility is. Is annotation a useful conversation? Is citation a useful conversation? Is classification a useful conversation? Are both bodies a useful conversation? And so I think once you approach that, and you say, we're not saying, okay, burn this down, start from scratch. We're saying there's an evolution going on here. The technology is enabling us to get to what we've always wanted, which is to get at that knowledge creation process as close to the inception as possible. So.
Each of these ideas, when I think about a state of life, but I have troubles when they're thinking about a public library, a journalist library.
Let me give a really specific example and then talk about it more broadly. A really specific example is imagine walking through your public library with the RFID-enabled tag, and as you approach a stack of books,
a kiosk at the end says, here are books you need to use my tag, based on the profile information you have filled. In the pre-library in Philadelphia, we're talking about when people come in to deal with music information, giving them areas where they can actually go in studios and do music production and podcasting them out. Communities of any sort, whether they're municipally based, whether they're academically based, whether they're corporate based, federally based, are having conversations. In the states, we're used to conversations on economic development. In states, we're used to conversations on violence prevention, unfortunately. In states, we're used to conversations on intellectual freedom and property. These are conversations that the public library stood at the forefront and said, if this is what you're interested in, here are the resources we can bring to it, and here's, by the way, our stake in it, and that we have voice here, not simply reflecting them back. In Europe, I was working with the Italian libraries, where they deal very much with cultural heritage. What is it of the produced record that we feel is important not only to preserve, but to communicate out and to interpret over time? So I think it may be really, the conversations may be more varied in the public sphere, but they're very much, a community has the ability to identify what it's talking about, and then the question becomes, how efficiently can it prioritize those conversations? Yes? Do I imply that the conversation can be designed? Certainly the conversation can be designed. I think that the question is the control that you bring to conversation, right? It's really a question of bounded
and
limited.
What? I am afraid that conversation cannot be designed, but it's interesting that you said straight what you think about, because I got that.
No conversation can be designed.
Yes, I think that this is my sense. I think that conversations, true, genuine conversations, cannot be designed. But this is why I was very curious to ask you, because I thought that, you know, that was what I implied from your presentation, that you thought that by making accessible all these very useful and important artifacts, we can make people convert.
No, no, that's not what I said. Conversations can be designed. Conversations can be undesigned. Conversations can be... This is a bounded, controlled conversation that we're in. It doesn't necessarily specify what's going to be said or what's going to be heard, obviously. But that's different. And I want to be really clear that, and Todd's working internationally with this in different contexts. So simply the idea of throwing a wiki at a group and saying, go convert, is insufficient.
This is the highest.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We have blog and we talk.
It's ridiculous.
Terrible.
It's terrible. But it can be facilitated. And that's the research that we need to do is to figure out how to do it. I will shut up. Thank you very much.